This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we start a brand new education segment on performance horse nutrition, and we'll be hearing from Jennifer Baumont. All that coming up, but first we have an item of news for you this week. The US riders who were recipients of grants to train in Europe as part of the European CDI Observation Event Squad have arrived in Germany and begun their competition schedule. This was following successful fundraising efforts and the continued generosity of the USET Foundation, the USOC, and USEF sponsors and members. An additional 13 combinations have been awarded grants by the USEF to compete and train in Europe. And you can find a full list of those combinations on the USEF network at usefnetwork.com. You'll find more dressage news and press releases on the USDF website at usdf.org. We're going to hear now from Jennifer Baumert, who recently graduated the USDF FEI Instructor Trainer Program, and she's going to be discussing coming up through the USDF Young Rider and other USDF educational programs. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the programs, actually, that you've come up through, because you've really come up through the ranks, haven't you, of the USDF programs, the educational sessions, the clinics, the workshops, the courses. There are so many on offer, but let's begin, shall we, with the Young Rider program, because you're a graduate of that, aren't you?
Yes, definitely. I came up through the Young Rider program many years ago. I graduated from Young Riders in the early 90s. So, I know there's a ton being offered today, and there was back when I was a Young Rider also. Probably the main thing that was offered to us, which was so valuable, and anybody of my time period remembers, is the clinics with Conrad Schumacher. He was brought to the United States with some frequency, so we were lucky enough to spend, a number of days with him at a time, and not just receive riding instruction, but there was unmounted lectures, and so that was super, super valuable. In my era of Young Riders, we had a really strong, I want to say, parent involvement. So our Advanced Young Riders did a lot of things together, fundraising things together, and that was really pretty special too, to create those bonds.
Well, how did you get started in the first place? What was the inspiration to do that, Jennifer?
When I was Young Rider, I first of all started out eventing. My mom is a dressage trainer. I definitely didn't think I would ever become a dressage rider. I was hardcore into eventing, but had some bad luck with different horses, and like any teenager, was completely in love with my horse. And when he continued with the eventing, I thought, oh, I'll just do a little bit of dressage. And of course, my mom always had, I actually did my first Young Rider test when I was 13, which is too young to do it, so it didn't count or anything, but on my mom's old Grand Prix horse in a jumping saddle, pretty funny. But, I sort of grew up with it, so it was, I guess, I was very lucky that it was kind of in front of me all the time.
It wasn't in the horse park then, of course. It was out west, wasn't it?
No. Yeah, it was mostly, usually it was held at Temple Farm in the Chicago area. And my first Young Rider championships was in 1988, and then I think my last one was like in 91 or 92, and that was in Canada. So it was never at Kentucky Horse Park, usually either in Montreal or in Chicago area.
And what would you say you got out of that, apart from the riding experience, obviously, but being part of a team and for those wider skills that you get as being part of a team?
Yeah, and also it's an introduction to, competing internationally. You have a chef to keep. There's a lot of emphasis on rules and, things that are going to come up if you're going to be a team rider later. Those things are going to come up, and strategy and that sort of thing. So it's definitely a wonderful experience, and still is. You know, I've had a number of students go through it, and one of them who did quite well in juniors last year, and will do the Young Writers this year. So it's you know, it's definitely a great introduction to, you know, writing internationally.
And you're also a graduate of other programs as well, such as the, you know, you've done the judges courses, you've done clinics and workshops. Talk a little bit about the differences there and what you took away from them.
Yeah, I really, really, really support and enjoy the certification program. When I went through it, at first through fourth level, I wish I remembered the year, but it was very, very early. It's right when they first started it. And, you know, my mother encouraged me, and she went through it, and it just was sort of the thing to do in our area. A lot of the instructors went through it in our area in the Northeast, and it was, I was amazed at how much I learned from it. And it's also just a wonderful opportunity to sort of share with other instructors in the area and get to know them a little bit better. And I mean, it is a little bit of a stressful process too. You know, you're really putting yourself on the spot, and most people who are taking it already have businesses, and a lot of people don't necessarily quote unquote need it, but I've found it really valuable. And then more recently I've gone through the FEI workshop, and again, I mean, just a big reminder of what a fabulous program it is. And I mean, even as an established, you know, trainer, every time I do a workshop, I always learn, always. So that's fabulous. I encourage, you know, people who work for me to go through the certification too. My assistant trainer now is taking workshops, and you know, I just think they're really valuable. I've gotten a lot out of them. I did go through the L program, but I never took the exam. I personally don't have judging goals, but again, phenomenal program. And, you know, just as a rider, getting to really learn about how, you know, how the judges are looking at the tests, and it's so valuable. So I really enjoyed that program as well.
And what other workshops have you done then that you've benefited from of the USDFs?
You know, I always take advantage of the trainers conference in Florida. They're often they piggyback little programs like the FEI workshop programs on those opportunities. So, you know, I definitely just try to take advantage of what is offered. I know years ago, I haven't been to the convention in a number of years, but I know they offer a lot at the convention also. And in years past, I've always taken advantage of those opportunities as well.
And is there anything else that you would recommend then, Jennifer, amongst all the educational programs that you've been involved with?
Yeah, everybody just needs to take advantage of what's out there. There's more and more. You know, it's just wonderful. I think just, you know, finding out what's available to you and really just taking advantage of it.
Exactly, taking advantage of all the broad range of trainers, clinicians, judges.
Yeah, and absolutely.
All right, well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program, Jennifer, and talking about all of those that you've benefited from that have helped you in your career and your business. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And now for part one of a four-part series on performance horse nutrition that was presented at the 2014 Adequan USDF annual meeting by Donald R. Kappa. This first part discusses forage and the healthy gut. You can find an accompanying article on this series in the May edition of the USDF Connection magazine.
We're going to cover several different topics lightly, but the big thing is on the performance horse nutrition and things that will involve that. And so we're looking at nutrition as the science of prevention. So if we know what's coming, we can prevent bad things from happening. We're going to look at body condition scoring, which Texas A&M came up with several years ago, and it's an excellent way of determining adequate or inadequate calories fed per day. And then we're going to talk about the top line evaluation, which Progressive Nutrition put together several years ago. And that explains the amino acids that build muscle and how you can visibly see the difference in muscle evaluation. And then we're going to get into the importance of replenishing amino acids and electrolyte in our performance horses. So what we have, all of you at home with your horses, is we have three equal factors that affect performance to achieve your optimal goal. They're genetics, training, and management, and nutrition. They're all three is equal. However, you have control of only two of them, the training or management of horses and the nutrition aspect of horses today. I know all of you know what the outside looks like. I wasn't sure how many of you know what the inside of the horse looks like. I just wanted you to see how small this stomach of the horse really is. The food doesn't stay in the stomach very long, nor does it stay in this 90 to 100 foot of small intestine. The rate of passage is very fast. As a matter of fact, from the time the horse starts eating until the stomach and small intestine is empty, it's about 3 hours. So if your horse goes more than 3 hours without eating, he's starving. And that's when you give him grain and he lays back his ears and he dives into it and you say, oh, he loves his grain. He's starving. And so he's a continuous grazer. That means that he's built to have forage in front of him all the time. And the research that has been done on rate of passage in the horses say that horses graze up to 18 hours a day. And so keep that in mind as far as reducing the incidence of digestive upset, colic, and ulcers, because that's critical to keeping the horses healthy and absorbing the nutrients that we're feeding them. Then on the hindgut, and this is where horses differ from us as humans, they have a functional hindgut. It's a large fermentation vat that allows them to break down forages that they eat and be able to digest them, where you and I cannot. But if the forages, the more mature or the more stemmy they are, the longer it stays in the fermentation vat. And so when you feed forages that are really stemmy, over-matured, that is what causes hay belly. Hay does not cause hay belly. Over-mature hay causes hay belly. That, because it's critical that we maintain optimal gut function when we're managing our horses today. When we're talking about forage, we're talking about pasture grass as a fresh. That'll be 50 to 80% water, 10 to 14% water, or dried compressed cubes, which will be about 8 to 10% water. And so that's why when we talk about forage, we're talking about all these, whether it's fresh grass or baled or cubed. But the forage has to be a minimum of 50% of the horse's diet per day to maintain optimal gut function. The closer you can get to 90%, the better the horse is. But they should be fed 2% of their body weight in hay per day as a minimum, as a starting point. So if the horse, for instance, weighs 1,000 pounds, that means that he's going to eat about 20 to 25 pounds of hay a day, depending on the maturity of the hay. That means that for every pound of grain you feed, he'll eat one less pound of hay. So 10 pounds of grain on a 1,000-pound horse is the absolute maximum to feed to maintain normal gut function. On a 1,250-pound horse, that changes to the hay up to 25 to 30 pounds a day, and 12.5 pounds is maximum amount of grain. On a 1,500-pound horse, that's 30 to 35 pounds of hay a day, and you can feed up to 15 pounds of grain a day maximum before you get into colic and digestive problems. So it's very, very important to remember that, not to go over half of the diet as grain when we're keeping these horses fed. The reason for this is because horses are a continuous grazing animal. As I said, they graze up to 18 hours a day, and we recommend free choice forage. And when they do that, horses are different than you and I. When we smell something good cooking, we start salivating in anticipation of how good it's going to taste. Horses don't do that. Horses only salivate on molar pressure. And so you might have heard the horse has chew time. There's so much time that they have to chew. And that's because every time the molars come together, some saliva squirts out. And so if they are allowed to graze and chew up to 18 hours a day, they will produce between 25 and 30 gallons of saliva per day, per 1,000 pounds of body weight. So there's a lot of gastric juices flowing while they're grazing. This helps maintain normal gut function. The saliva contains enzymes, you know, as well as a lubricant to keep the digestive tract going, because we're feeding dry hay and dried grain mixture to horses. But if you look inside the horse, it's a slurry. And that's why, because they produce that much water in the saliva. The saliva is also the best buffer that we have to control pH. And pH has a great deal to do with ulcers and reducing the incidence of them. Also, I said that within 3 hours, the small intestine is going to be empty. I like to compare that to sausage casing. When sausage casing is full of sausage, it's almost impossible to twist. But when it's empty, it's very easy to twist. So is the small intestine of the horse. So it's critical that we keep hay in front of these horses. The other thing it affects is between their ears. It affects them from getting bored and creating stable vices. So especially in stress situations that we see today in performance horses. So feeding free choice forage will decrease the incidence of colic and digestive upset and reduce the incidence of ulcers. It'll improve the horse's mental state. They'll pay attention to you better while you're riding. It'll increase nutrient absorption of what you are feeding, and it maximizes feed efficiency. So when everything is working optimally, it's amazing how efficient they are and how little it takes to keep desired body weight on these horses. Good hay is considered 100 or higher. Anything less than 100 relative feed value is considered fair to poor. But the difference in proteins that we're going to see, the average was 14% in the grass. The average on the hay was 5.5. Now remember, this is average. The lowest was 2.8. That was Timothy hay, that the Timothy heads were 8 inches long. Straw is 4, just to give you an idea. The non-structured carbohydrates, so the starch and sugar, is 15% in the grass, 9% in the overmature hay. Calories per pound went from 1,100 down to 770. Now what that means is you're going to have to feed a lot more grain to keep body weight on the horse, the same body weight. Just like you have to increase the amount of protein so they don't lose muscle mass. When we're looking at forage and the percentage of fiber increases, and that's what happens as the plant matures, as the percentage of fiber increases, the percentage of everything else decreases. Protein, calories, minerals, trace minerals, major minerals, all of them. So what I'm really getting down to is the economics of it, as in addition to the health of the horse, because it'll make a huge difference per day or per month or per year. For example, I've taken an 1,100-pound horse in light work. Will require about 20,000 calories a day. If the relative feed value in your hay is 86, which means it was late cut and stemmy, if you feed 22 pounds of that a day at times 700 calories per pound, that gives us 14,000 calories a day. So we have to add additional 4,600 calories so he doesn't lose body weight. There's several ways we can do that. We could feed 6 pounds, or we could feed a diet balancer at 2 pounds a day and then add a high fat supplement on top of that. Or if you're feeding a hay with a relative feed value of 110, which means it's very fine stemmed and was cut early, feed 22 pounds of that at 11,000 calories per pound. That's 22,000 calories. That's more than they need. So the last thing in the world you need to feed them is more grain. And so that's where feeding a diet balancer comes into play. And you can feed 2 pounds a day of a diet balancer and meet all of their needs for protein, mineral, and vitamins without adding the extra calories. So when you're looking at a horse, the performance loss you will feel and you will see will occur before you can actually see the problem on the body weight of the horse. All right. So the visual changes then we'll show you why the performance has been affected. But remember, nutrition is the science of prevention, so we want to address this before you have a problem. And so be proactive when you're setting up a feeding program for your horses today.
And we'll be continuing this series over the next few weeks. In the meanwhile, don't forget to check out the May edition of the USDF Connection magazine for that companion article. And be sure to check the eTrack section of the USDF.org website, where you'll find more educational resources and also more information on the topics that we cover here on the podcast. As well as being available on the website, this podcast is also available on iTunes in the podcast store. Just look for USDF, and it can be downloaded to any smartphone or tablet app, including Stitcher and Podbean. And that's it for this week's episode. Our thanks to all of you around the world for tuning in. We'll be back with much more next week, but for now, don't forget that the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.